the station with more hair, more flair, yet so debonair.
RadioInfluence.com.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. Here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Bellator 184 will take place on Friday night, and on Saturday night in Las Vegas, it'll be UFC 216, and we are going to preview both of these fight cards here on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast on Radio Influence. Some of the topics we're going to discuss coming up here on this episode of the Preview Podcast, the structure of the UFC 216 card, what's our thoughts on how the UFC, the fights they put on the main card as opposed to the prelims. We're going to give you a prediction on who we think could potentially announce their retirement. It seems like it happens more times than not with the UFC. Also, we will tell you the underdog with the best chance to win. Plus, we're going to talk about that Bellator card, which personally I think is a really excellent fight card that Bellator has put together. Of course, that'll be a main card on Spike. But, of course, we're brought to you by Fight TV. Fight, your number one source for MMA, boxing, and pro wrestling video. Watch MMA wrestling and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV, using just the Fight app. You can download Fight free today by going to fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. And if you are a cord cutter and you want to watch UFC 216, you can do that on Fight for $59.99, available in English and in Spanish. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Jason, my amigo. I'm glad that you can get that in Spanish. And I may, in fact, watch all the MMA in Spanish to upgrade my Spanish-speaking language. But yeah, Jason, it's going good. I'm super pumped. I'm super excited. We had a week without a UFC card, and by God, here we are. Got UFC on Saturday. A good Bellator card on Friday. Jason, I am seriously tingling.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at both of these fight cards, I think there's interesting matchups on both fight cards. You look at the Bellator fight card, I love the main event of Eduardo Dantas defending the bantamweight title against Darion Caldwell. Also, you got, you know, Daniel Strauss returning for the first time since losing the featherweight title. Also, we got the return of Pat Curran, his first fight in 16 months. Also, that Bellator card on the preliminary card has a very intriguing matchup of lightweight prospects, Steve Cazola and Carrington Banks. And, of course, when you look at that UFC fight card, you know, I talked about this on my podcast earlier this week. I'm just a fan of greatness. So, ultimately, that is why I am going to be tuning into UFC 216, ultimately, is because of Demetrius Johnson. I'm just a fan of greatness. But there is, I think we talked about this when we did the post-fight show last. I absolutely love the televised prelims.
For the UFC 216?
Yes.
I love two of the fights on the televised prelims. I really love the main event fight. I love watching Tom Duquesne. I think Bobby Green, Lando Vannetta lends itself to both these fighters doing absurdly crazy things in the cage, right? Because we've seen Bobby Green's bravado with, like, sticking his chin out, hands down that time, and weird movement. And obviously Lando Vannetta is a man who just spins and spins and spins like there's no tomorrow. I love those two fights, Jason. But are you telling me you're looking forward to Will Brooks and Nick Lentz?
There's an interesting storyline behind that. Nick Lentz left American Top Team. Of course, Will Brooks is an ATT fighter. So for me, there's an interesting storyline there. But from a how that fight will play out, chance that's not a very exciting fight. I mean, you know, one of the things that when we were going back and forth of what to talk about here, one of the things you mentioned was a structure of this UFC fight card. And to me, I still don't understand why you have a matchup of two women's flyweight fighters debuting on the main card and not have a fight like Lando Vannetta and Bobby Green on the main card.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that Andrea Lee, Kalindra Ferio was the original fight. And you know, Kalindra has won three in a row. And her new opponent, Mara Romero, recently got a win in a main event slot in Invicta. but I probably would not favor that fight over Vanetta Green. And honestly, Jason, you know, we have a flyweight championship fight in the co-main event. And you look at the UFC Fight Pass prelims, I think a fight that would make a lot more sense either on the main card or on the FXX prelims would be the flyweight bout between John Moraga and Magomed Bibilatov. Just because I think Bibilatov has an obscenely high ceiling and Moraga's a former title challenger.
Yeah, I think we look at Magomed as a guy who could potentially, you know, challenge Demetrius Johnson down the road. By the way, prelims on FX, not FXX.
Wikipedia, you monster.
I did notice that earlier this week that Wikipedia was wrong, but the prelims are on FX. I think there's a part about the structure of this fight card is the fact of you got Demetrius Johnson looking to make UFC history with, you know, the most consecutive title defenses and the fact of he's not even in the main event. And I ultimately think that whether in terms of pay-per-view buys, I don't think it really matters what fight is the main event and co-main event. But I will say this. I think that Kevin Lee has gone full throttle on the promotion mode to make himself into a bigger star. And, you know, I think you have to look at Kevin Lee as a guy that could potentially be a guy that could be a star for the UFC.
I just got sidetracked. I don't mean to humble brag, but I did just edit the Wikipedia. So now it says FX. So I'm a great person. But yes, I thought about this last night, Jason, the championship deal. Because the last time we talked about this, I believe I was on the side of Demetrius Johnson should main event this show because he's being built up as the best fighter ever or whatever. And he probably is. But I was thinking about this at night, Jason. And between these two fights, which fight is more likely to give us that nice feeling in our stomach that we watched a great event? Johnson Borg or Lee Ferguson? And I think it's without question, Lee Ferguson is more likely to be the more exciting fight that will deliver in the main event slot because both Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee recently have been a part of very exciting fights that have either been back and forth really close or we've seen some really dominant finishes. So at the end of the day, I think long-term Johnson Borg's the main event you should probably go with just because Demetrius Johnson is supposed to be a quote-unquote legend and superstar. That there's long-term value there, but short-term Saturday, you're asking me which fight on that entire fight card I am most looking forward to seeing? It's absolutely Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee.
You know, I don't know how it's like for you, but, you know, with the guys I watch the fights with, I mean, you know, we're all big, you know, fight fans. And I remember prior to UFC 215, you know, we were, you know, in the group text, like, hey, you know, what do you want to do for the fights? And basically everyone in my group was just interested in Demetrius Johnson just because of who he is, which I think, but however, we're kind of in a very small minority of people who ultimately get excited for this. I think also part of the reason it's a co-main event, I think the UFC kind of looks at the metrics of how UFC 215 was looking heading into that event prior to Ray Borg, you know, being pulled from this fight. And I guess we should put the note here, Daniel. We are recording this podcast before the weigh-ins, so let's hope we don't lose any fights here. But, Kevin Lee, I look at it, he's taking full advantage. And a question we got here from Scott, he said, how pissed will everyone be when McGregor faces someone besides UFC 216 main event winner for the lightweight belt this spring? Now, Conor has already come out and said that he's going to be watching on Saturday night, and he wants to see how this thing plays out. I think that if you are Kevin Lee, I truly believe Kevin Lee is talking himself into a potential Conor McGregor fight. And that's awful news if you're Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see Nurmagomedov and McGregor when McGregor returns, I just feel like he's behind Ferguson Lee in the lightweight, and he's behind any person with the last name Diaz, and he's behind George St. Pierre. Unfortunately for Nurmagomedov, it's all about name value, and Kevin Lee's done the best job of getting that name value.
Let's not forget, remember after UFC 205, when Conor won the lightweight title, Khabib's name came up and he said, look, you know, this guy's got to show me he's going to show up on fight night. He goes, I don't want to go through an entire training camp preparing for a guy, and then a week before the fight, he's not going to show up. And look, Khabib, it's, you know, his team may not like that narrative, but it's a true narrative. you know, you're going to sit there. You can't always trust that Khabib is going to show up on fight night. I mean, just look what happened back in March with Tony Ferguson. And, you know, of course, you know, this was the UFC wanted to do Tony Khabib, and they wanted this fight to be November 4th. And then Khabib's team says they're not ready. So the UFC says, all right, cool, we're moving on. You know, Kevin Lee's now getting the interim title fight. And then, of course, after the fact, Khabib's team says, oh, no, we can fight. And I'm like, and I've never gotten with Khabib's team of why they think they have leverage with the UFC. I don't get it. I mean, look, Khabib's a great fighter, but, you know, the guy, you know, is, you know, unfortunately injuries have derailed him. And, you know, I think if you're Khabib, you probably got to be rooting for a Tony Ferguson win here, because I think if Tony wins, I think we're looking at Conor Nate Diaz 3, whether, you know, it's December 30th or sometime in 2018. And, you know, Kevin Lee is kind of a guy that's just kind of arisen that, you know, I mean, if I would have told you before that Michael Chiesa fight that his next fight's for the interim lightweight title, you probably would have said I was crazy.
Absolutely. I would be incredibly sad to hear about the, I don't know what took place with all the UFC lightweights. I don't know if they all decided to retire at the same time, but why Kevin Lee's in this situation, I would not know. And as we've seen, I don't know if this was Kevin Lee's personality. I never noticed it in the early part of his UFC career. I would hazard a guess that he flipped a switch when it comes to his interviews, press conferences, etc. And that flip switch has worked. You look at Nurmagomedov's resume, it is quite impressive. 24-0. Ferguson, what he's done with 9 consecutive wins at lightweight. And Kevin Lee, just by his personality matched with what he brings inside the cage, has literally put himself in one of the best positions that he could have just because of what he's done outside of the cage. Like, it's crazy to me. Not crazy. It actually makes total sense. But it must be really, really annoying for Ferguson and Nurmagomedov to see, like, the subtext of what we're seeing here, in that Kevin Lee is almost jumping people left and right because he's like the one guy that paid attention to what got Conor McGregor the notoriety. You know, obviously what he did inside the cage, but that was backed up by, you know, what Conor has done inside the cage is far less impressive than what Demetrius Johnson has. And one of the two is the only one that can do a million buys in the UFC now. I may have talked myself into a hole. Maybe there's someone else. But, yeah, Kevin Lee's following the Conor McGregor playbook. And obviously, if you ask Dana White, who would you rather win this fight, I think Kevin Lee is the clear answer.
Oh, I think there's no doubt about it. I do feel fairly confident in picking Tony Ferguson in this fight. However, if the Tony Ferguson that showed up against Lando Vannetta shows up on Saturday night in Las Vegas, ooh, I don't feel very confident.
Yeah, I will counter you with, if the Kevin Lee who showed up in that first round against Francisco Trinaldo shows up against Tony Ferguson, I also wouldn't feel confident. But you're right, man. There's been some big fluctuations. That Vannetta fight was really, really weird. Tony Ferguson's my pick, too. I haven't even seen the odds in this one. Wow. Ferguson's at -230, according to Five Dimes, on best fight odds. I think with this one, it's fairly simple, Jason. I feel quite good about Tony Ferguson's slick grappling control on the ground. I feel pretty good about Tony Ferguson's striking compared to Kevin Lee, while admitting that Kevin Lee brings a lot of explosiveness with his combinations and could certainly catch Ferguson. Over the long haul, Ferguson would be my pick. And also, Ferguson would be my pick to win this one early. What I like about Kevin Lee's game, actually, is his wrestling. I think he has a pretty strong base, mm-hmm. and he could go to that to steal some rounds. So Kevin Lee is certainly a live dog. But having watched the success Ferguson has had in some of his recent fights, with some exceptions, I think it's hard to not pick Tony Ferguson this fight.
Yeah, it's definitely hard not to pick him. So we'll see what kind of plays out after the fact with this one. Co-main event, of course.
Wait. How do you think that this fight ends, though?
I think it's going all five rounds.
Really? All five rounds?
Yeah, I think unless one of the guys just kind of wears out, but I think it goes all 25 minutes.
Look, man, I'm going to be specific as hell. Second round, we're talking the 4th minute, Jason, the 5th second. Rear naked choke submission for Tony Ferguson. I called it now. Book it. Guaranteed.
Mark the tape, you know, in case you are right or you're wrong, and we'll just play it on the post-fight show.
Absolutely not. Let's not do that.
But the co-main event, of course, we talked about title matchup, Demetrius Johnson, Ray Borg. Can you talk me into picking Ray Borg?
Look, man, Demetrius Johnson might get really sick the day of the fight and then actually fight. Like, that is the best case scenario for Ray Borg. To be less of a sarcastic prick, I will say this. Ray Borg is fairly young. Ray Borg has shown great fight-to-fight improvement. Ray Borg is quite fast. And he is a guy who would likely have, you know, he would be in a nice position to maybe potentially be flyweight champion if DJ ever leaves the division. Although I'd probably still pick Joseph Benavidez against him and a couple other guys like Cejudo. But look, Ray Borg's fairly good. It's just that unfortunately for him and for literally every flyweight, there is a tremendous gap between them and Demetrius Johnson. And it's absolutely hard for me to nail down what I think Borg could do against DJ. I was reading an article that Dan Hardy wrote Dan Hardy literally does everything, by the way. Like, it's kind of scary because I really enjoyed the writing of the article. I thought it was quite well. But check this out, all right? Demetrius Johnson won the flyweight championship on September 22nd, 2012. And I had not realized that, but Ray Borg started his mixed martial arts professional career literally 1 month before that.
Wow.
That's when DJ won the flyweight title. DJ won the flyweight title when Ray Borg was 1-0. So that just kind of shows you how long DJ's held that title as he looks to, win his 11th in a row?
Yeah, 11th consecutive title defense here. And of course, Ray Borg, he's coming off that win against Joshua Formiga back in March. But I can't see anyone truly making a case here for Ray Borg. I think DJ wins. And I think DJ wins by stoppage within the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think it may, in fact, just be a first-round stoppage. Potentially, Borg can survive second and third round. I just think DJ is looking to make a statement. I'm sure him and Matt Hume have really figured out how to maintain the momentum they had going into camp with their original fight being called off. I feel like that has to disrupt your flow and whatnot. Ray Borg, the key for him is take high-risk chances because you have to be self-aware knowing the talent level between yourself and DJ. And just when you know that you're going up against a guy who is likely better than you in nearly every facet, there is real value in going high-risk with your strikes, takedowns, and grappling and submission attempts, allowing yourself to potentially get finished but putting yourself in the best position to win. Ray Borg's got to go for that strategy.
Now, when I look at this UFC 216 pay-per-view, to me, you know, I talked about how I'm a fan of greatness. That's ultimately what's bringing me to the television set on Saturday night. But for me, it's the top three fights. Those are the fights I want to see. Big matchup in the heavyweight division for Fabricio Werdum versus Derek Lewis. Of course, Derek Lewis, short-lived retirement. But this week, he's talked about, you know, having a tough time focusing with everything. You know, what's going on home in Houston. Of course, what happened in Las Vegas on Sunday. And Fabricio Werdum, I don't know how anyone can be rooting for this guy. I just don't get it. And, of course, I'm going to play a clip that from an interview he did with Ariel Helwani, where Ariel asked him about his relationship with the call him the Chechen dictator.
And by the way, a couple years ago, I had you on my show, and we talked about your friendship with Ramzan Kadyrov. But mm-hmm. since then, a lot of stuff has happened, and sometimes you're criticized for your friendship with him. How do you feel about that criticism, and will you rethink your relationship with him based on some of the information that's come out over the last few months?
My relationship with Kadyrov is like for MMA, you know? The politic things is so different, you know? The politic things, I don't like in Brazil too, man. I don't know nothing about politics. And the political thing is one thing. I'm the ambassador from Chechnya, MMA ambassador. That's it. This you ask about the fighters there. I say for you, I have a good fighters in Chechnya, like a big fighters. I have maybe two or three fights, the Chechnya fights in fighting UFC. Got the guys stuff. You ask him about this for MMA. I say I respond for everything, but political things is so different.
But is it hard to separate once you find out these things or hear some comments?
No. For me,
it doesn't make you change.
Yeah, for me, it's very easy because it's like a big difference in the things, you know, politics and the MMA is a big difference.
Okay, so you'll still remain the ambassador for MMA in Chechnya?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, because I know I have a lot of tough fighters. Yeah, I have more guys come to the UFC too from Chechnya.
Daniel, what? You can say you don't like his politics, but you're still supporting him. So I don't know how anyone can be I think Mauricio Verdum's going to win on Saturday night? Yes, but I don't know how anyone could cheer for this guy.
Dude, this isn't like a politics issue, right? Like politics, me and you, Jason, can have a political debate about tax reform or whether or not a squirrel should be charged for littering because of all the damn acorns you eat. That's a political discussion. Like, you watch, you read about Kadyrov, Chechnya, and it's like not politics. It's pure evil. Like, they're just straight up killing gay people, and that's one of the many crimes and offenses this man is responsible for. And this is a tough one, right? Because earlier we talked about Bibulatov. I think the clear difference between him and Verdum is, Bibulatov was born into this and born into the country. I feel like if you're born into a country like that, you may not have many choices when you move up the social ladder. That still doesn't excuse it, and it's still something we should mention with every Chechenian fighter that supports Kadyrov. But you look at Verdum, this is a guy who seeked out this man, quote-unquote befriended him, represents him as a mixed martial arts ambassador and enables him. And we should continue to mention this even when we talk about Chechenian fighters, but it is so significantly worse, in my opinion, what Verdum is doing. And it's like this dude is an absolutely evil guy. I don't want to use that word sparingly. And it's like, it sucks that his fingerprint is on this sport. And there are plenty of bad guys who are associated, but I think it's kind of our responsibility to hold fighters accountable who are associating themselves with evil people. And that's kind of what Verdum is doing here. And it's not really something you can sweep under the rug as a political decision, killing people like that for simply their sexual orientation is not a political issue. It's a human issue. It's like just not being a total absolute devil. And it's hard to grapple with, but actually not really. Like, Verdum, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, this is a guy, Jason, who every time he talks kind of ruins his legacy a little bit, and he's done a whole hell of a lot, but who cares if you're enabling such a absolutely awful person?
Look, I can see if a couple years ago, someone came to you and said, hey, you can go over, and teach a seminar in Chechnya and you can make this, and you just didn't know about it. But after an HBO sports story came out and the reporting from Kareem Zidane of BloodyElbow.com, how do you not know what you're putting yourself into? So I think that there's going to be a lot of people, I think probably a majority of people, that are going to be rooting for Derek Lewis to win this fight. I think this, the problem is Fabricio Verdum has more ways to win this matchup. As I picture this matchup going, I think that you're going to see Fabricio either try to get this fight to the ground, or he is going to try to get this fight against the fence. But, Derek Lewis is a fan favorite already, but there's going to be a lot of people rooting against Fabricio Verdum, and you would just hope that there would be someone around Fabricio Verdum that would listen to that comment and just have a sit-down conversation with him. And maybe they need to go over everything, that goes on in Chechnya and really describe what it is. But, to me, I don't know how anyone can root for Fabricio Verdum.
Yeah, it's absolutely hard to. We really need to be vigilant of this one with him along with the other Chechnyan fighters. It's a tough one, but for this one, not so much. And for this one, yeah, it makes sense to pick Verdum here. If you want to look at the fight aspect of this, like, clearly the better grappler. He's got more patience with his striking, and he has the ability to really damage Lewis's body, which has been almost like an Achilles heel. It's just his entire tummy, which is an amazing tummy out of Derek Lewis and an amazing person. I mean, Jesus, the pictures and videos of him carrying people in water in Houston. Are you kidding me? What an amazing dude. A funny guy, a great guy. Probably not the smartest pick, but whatever. I don't really care. I'm going Derek Lewis first round knockout. It's going to happen, Jason. Guy's coming back from retirement. And then Verdum retires afterwards. That's my pick.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. I mean, I think it was Patrick Wyman who wrote an article, I think on Deadspin, of the UFC has a Chechnya problem. I'm pretty sure it was Patrick Wyman who wrote that article. And, you know, the UFC really hasn't addressed it. And, you know, but I think it's the job of, you know, the media to really question the UFC on that. Now, we did get a question related to the heavyweight division from James. He says, what's the holdup with Stipe Miocic? Clearly money. But is this going to be like Bellator heavyweight championship style holdout? Also, a Cain Velasquez update. First off, on Cain Velasquez, he is he's talked about, you know, he had a little bit of a setback. He is looking to return sometime in 2018. He has been training, so, you know, 2018 is most likely when we'll see Cain Velasquez. You know, look, Stipe Miocic, you know, he's not been happy with his contract. Personally, I don't think Stipe has a lot of leverage on the UFC. I would expect that you see Stipe here in the very near future. I mean, they just got the Max Holloway contract situation handled. I expect Stipe will get done here very shortly. And look, if Doom gets a win here, he puts himself right there in line for a title shot. You've got Ngannou and Overeem coming up in December. And Overeem said this week that UFC has told him that if he wins, he gets a title matchup. You know, so I think ultimately it's just going to kind of come down to see how these two fights do play out. But I have a feeling that even if Doom goes out and has an unbelievable victory, if Francis Ngannou goes out and destroys Alistair Overeem, he will be the next title challenger.
Man, if Ngannou slightly beats Overeem, he's the next title challenger, right? Like, if this is a boring five-round split decision, I think Francis is unique and he's got a great juice about him. More likely than not, if he does win, it will be quite impressive. I think barring any injury, with a victory, Francis is an absolute guarantee to win. But, I mean, what a tough challenge for Ngannou to get there. But I think he's certainly in the driver's seat, and there isn't anybody too close to him other than, you know, you mentioned it. I hope at some point in the future Cain fights again, but Ngannou is a guy who is primed and ready, and with the win, unless absolutely absurd controversy takes place in him getting a victory, he is undoubtedly the guy for the next title shot against Stipe. And maybe this is the type of fight that gives Stipe the leverage he needs, because the leverage he needs in contract negotiations is he needs to go to the table and say to the UFC, I bring you a real value as a pay-per-view draw. This is not something Miocic can say today, but if he figures out how to market himself correctly, which is a difficult quandary, and it's a quandary that every fighter in the UFC is trying to figure out, if he can get himself into a position where he can go out there and do upwards of 275,000 buy rates on his name alone, then he has his leverage. At this point, he doesn't.
Yeah, it's just, and I think if you're the UFC with Stipe, I think you just put him in Cleveland. I think that makes the most sense. Women's flyweight matchup between two fighters making their UFC debut, Mauro Romero Barella against Kalindra Fajeia. When I got to know who she was, when she had a little bit of an issue with the XFC and the World Series of Fighting, when the World Series of Fighting was trying to have her have a fight here. You know, when you look at Romero, she has unbeaten her last six fights. I think you mentioned a little earlier, coming off that win in Invicta back in July. You know, I think that, you know, it's kind of going back to what we talked about a little earlier, the structure of this fight card. It's interesting to see that the UFC put this on the main card, which ultimately kind of leads me to thinking, is the winner of this fight potentially, could they be looking at fighting for the title in early 2018?
Man, I feel like for them, you have to assume there's a couple other fighters in the woodwork. I think obviously Paige VanZant, whenever that fight takes place, because I feel like Paige is just like one win and she gets a title shot. But I feel like there's a couple other fighters who just have a tad bit more name value, 135 and 115, that could get a title shot. But you begin to look at their resumes, and both Mara and Kalindra really snuck up on me. I had not realized the success they had. And for Fadia, you look and you see a decision loss to Aguilar, and you watch the fight and it wasn't the greatest fight in the world, and a split decision loss to Kovacevic, it isn't the worst thing in the world. Mara's coming off a win over Milana Dudieva. So, yeah, it tells me the UFC sees something potentially in Kalindra, given that she was originally slotted to fight Andrea Lee, and maybe they just saw something in Andrea Lee. Like, maybe that's what took place. They wanted to highlight her, but At the end of the day, I think Kalindra is in the best position to win here, and it kind of shows that there is a bit of lack of depth at flyweight. That's a bit apparent when you look at the Ultimate Fighter cast, but over time, I think these fighters will come in from 135, 115, and help that problem out. And I would not bet on either of these two fighters getting a title shot with that being said.
Boy, have you noticed how bad the Ultimate Fighter ratings are?
No, I haven't, because
it's always like under, like, even DVR, you know, it's always under 400,000. It just seems like no one cares.
Didn't they give an episode on Fox?
Yeah, they did, yeah. I mean, and that was just basically to try to, you know, get people interested in the product. And
I'm going to throw a curveball at you real quick. Real quick. Ready? There's this wrestling commentator that passed away, Lance Russell, a couple of days ago. Hardcore Memphis legend in Memphis wrestling. And he was originally a TV director, okay? And one of the things that have been talked about is he pitched the idea of running wrestling in Memphis Saturday at 11 o'clock. They called him crazy because they said adults don't watch TV at 11. And then it turned out like that was a dramatic success for years. So Saturday at 11 a.m., that time slot worked. What random time slot you think the UFC should put their product on and you think would be a success? Or have we already figured out all kinds of time slots?
I mean, at this stage, I don't, you know, I mean, how are you going to get people interested in the Ultimate Fighter? I mean, I just, you know,
yeah,
it's a product that, you know, it just doesn't interest me. I'm just being honest. It just does not interest me. It's the same show every year, and it's just a different cast of characters. It's just, and when you have a title on the line and that's clearly not, you know, drawing a peak in people, you know, tuning on their television set, I think that says a lot. And, you know, I don't think the Ultimate Fighter ultimately goes away, because still, even with what the ratings are, I mean, unless FS1 has live sports play by play, they're not going to put anything in there that's going to draw anything like those kind of numbers.
Yeah, you're right. There really isn't. And it's just sad. I mean, this is a show that literally probably should have died 5 years ago in 2012. But it continues to trudge on. And this one certainly has stakes as they crown a flyweight champion.
I think their side of this is, you know, if you're an up-and-coming, you know, prospect, do you want to go on the Ultimate Fighter and live in a house for 6 weeks away from your friends and family? Or do you want to just get on, you know, the Contender Series?
Man, I would go with the Ultimate Fighter, because the deal is, like, if you win, that is a lot of money. But it's much tougher than it was before. I think prior it was
You're not stuck in a crappy Ultimate Fighter contract.
Ooh, good point. Valid point. It's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Still, though, I mean, I think it compares to where you are in your mixed martial arts talent, right? Like, if you're a superstar, no. If you're, like, a middling fighter, you know, like a 12-6 record or something like that, I think you take the chance. But if it appears as though you have leverage, I would not go in the house. That is the underpin of that, the contract. But I don't know, man. It's hard. It certainly doesn't have the appeal it once did 7 years ago, when it seemed like if you were on that show, you would become a star. Like, I'm sure Nate Diaz would have been a star regardless. Obviously, the guy is a madman and an amazing man at that, as is his brother. But I'm sure that helped. And you look at everybody from Forrest Griffin to your Matt Serras, although, again, what got him big was what he did to GSP. But it certainly doesn't have the same effect. But it does seem like if you were to power rank, you know, you go back the last, like, 10 years and you say, who are the 40 biggest stars in the UFC? I think you would be shocked, maybe, to see how many of those guys had, in fact, made their way into the UFC through the Ultimate Fighter House.
Yeah, there's been a lot of them, but I'm going with Kalindra in my pick in that fight. Is that your pick as well?
Absolutely.
The opening matchup of the main card, lightweight matchup, Neil Dariush and Evan Dunham. Evan Dunham has to be the quietest 4-fight win streak in the lightweight division currently in the UFC. I think that's something that a lot of people do not know. You know, all those wins have come by stoppage. By decision. His last stoppage win came back in 2012 against Nick Lentz. He also does own the 10th best strikes land per minute rate in UFC history. Of course, Benil Dariush, You know, coming off that loss against Edson Barboza. You know, he is 2-2 in his last four fights. Losses against Michael Chiesa and Edson Barboza, both of those did come by stoppage. And we look at Evan Dunham in his four-fight win streak, Rodrigo Dam, Ross Pearson, Joe Lozon, and Rick Glenn. You know, when I think about underdogs that maybe had the best chance to win, Evan Dunham is one of those guys that definitely is someone I look at plus 190, but I am going to go with Beneil Dariush.
Yeah, it's a hard fight to predict. Originally, when this fight was, I was looking at it, I felt like Dariush would come in and knock out Dunham and begin to look at what Dunham did in his fight against Rick Glenn, Joe Lozon, and the 2 wins prior. He's surprised me with his output, to say the least. I thought after his string of really tough losses in that 2013-2014 range against Cerrone, Dos Anjos, and Barboza, I was kind of ready to count Dunham out as he aged out. He has done anything but. He looked great in Hidalgo, just a phenomenal fight against Rick Glenn. Yeah. And I could see an incredibly close decision here, but I still digress and go back to Dariush. I do think we've seen – I do think he has just dynamite power in his hands. And one of those exchanges, I wouldn't be surprised if he catches Dunham. But, I mean, Dunham is so tough. He's been in so many wars, and hardly have you seen him knocked out. So I'll go with Dariush, but begrudgingly.
You know, and it's been 13 months since we've seen Evan Dunham. Was supposed to fight earlier this year, but had to pull out of that matchup. But I am going to go with Beneil Dariush. When it comes to the prelims, you know, Cody Stamann and Tom Dukinwa is just a great matchup at 135 pounds. Everyone, I mean, if you follow regional MMA, you know who Tom Dukinwa is, and probably also knew who Cody Stamann was as he worked his way up. You know, when I talked to Cody Stamann, you know, he talked to me about, you know, some of the way people have fought Tom Dukinwa, and I walked away from the conversation going, he is going to force this fight to the ground, and if that happens, I think Cody Stamann is going to win by decision.
Yep, we've seen that hole in Dukinwa's game, the wrestling. I think Stamann brings better wrestling than Dukinwa's faced thus far, and he brings a pretty solid ability to maintain that wrestling and not really get too tired, as we've seen. Great energy. Stamann's a smart pick, but I will go with the fun one. I think Dukinwa, at some point in time within the three rounds, does catch Cody Stamann with his tremendous, fantastic, aggressive stand-up, but this is one where I'll be kicking myself as we see Stamann grind his way to a three-round decision.
It's odd matchmaking to me.
Yeah, right? Because, well, it's obvious. Why is it odd, Jason?
Well, because Tom Dukinwa, because of his style, has this, you know, fun fighting style, and you're putting up against a guy who's got the wrestling background. And it's also, it's two prospects who both are 15-1 in their career, so you're, why not keep them on different paths?
Yep.
And build up to this fight instead of you're going to knock one guy down now. I mean, look, if Dukinwa can somehow keep this fight on the feet, yeah, I think he can win by stoppage. But to me, I think the wrestling of Cody Stamann will be too much, and he'll get the decision victory.
Yeah, I agree with you. Poor matchup for Dukinwa. I think that was a bad idea. Do not match up your exciting young strikers with wrestlers. Could bite him in the butt, but I will still go with Tom Dukinwa.
Will Brooks and Nick Lentz, you know, this is a matchup that we talked a little bit about earlier. You have Nick Lentz, who recently left the ATT, and the UFC immediately jumped on this opportunity to have one ATT fighter and a former ATT fighter take on each other. And when I looked at the odds on Best Fight Odds, I was shocked to see that Will Brooks is nearly a 4-1 favorite.
Yeah, man. He has not looked particularly great in his last fights. he has been a pretty rough signing for the UFC. Looking at what you expected him to do and what he has done, he doesn't really deserve to be this big of a favorite against kind of a solid, scrappy veteran who's had so much success in the UFC, and Nick Lentz.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. I mean, my pick is still Will Brooks, but man, if I was in Vegas, I can't deny that I might not put a little money on Nick Lentz just because the odds are so great.
Yeah, man. You look at Will Brooks and you ask, what has he done in the UFC? And he had a close decision win over Ross Pearson. He had some nice moments in that fight. He followed it up with the KO loss to Alex Oliveira, and he took on his brother from another mother, Charles, and lost in that one. I feel like Nick Lenz has the ability to have some success when this one hits the ground, as I would anticipate it. I think Will will probably get the better of the standing, may in fact use his size and potentially youth to win the wrestling power. But I actually, I don't know, in a wrestling battle, grappling battle, Nick Lentz may be scrappy enough to pull it out. It's one where if Nick Lentz gets his hand raised at the end of the night, I think we'll look back and really second guess their decision to pick Will Brooks. But like you, it feels like this is an opportunity for Will Brooks to rebound, and with a loss, that would just be absolutely devastating. I mean, he can still rebound from his initial entry into the UFC and piece things together, get himself back up to where he once was prior to signing that UFC contract. But with a loss here, that would put him in just an absurdly bad trajectory.
Yeah. When it comes to who might win Fight of the Night, I think a lot of people are going to look at Lando Vannetta and Bobby Green. Bobby Green's lost three in a row. His last win came back in 2014 against Josh Thompson. I mean, you always hate to say if there's no way this fight doesn't deliver, but man, I don't know how this fight, you know, is not going to just be bananas.
Yeah, man. I think these two guys have the type of fight profiles to egg each other on and just try and top one another with excitement and crazy attempts at attacks. And like you, this is a heavy favorite. I mean, there are three fights that I have circled that I think will be just fantastic in the main event in this one. And even Darius Dunham, I think, could be great. But Green Vannetta is a solid one. I think if this plays out entirely on the feet, Vannetta is my pick. If Bobby goes to the wrestling, which he may in fact go for, that's the greatest threat to this one being a Fight of the Night contender. But that to me is a place in which Green could steal the fight against Vannetta. But I think Lando will look good in a stand-up affair here.
Are you like me and like underdog Pearl Gonzalez?
She's an underdog in that fight?
Yes.
Wow, yeah, no, I do like her. I think she has a much higher output of strikes than her opponent, and that's going to win her a decision. I like Gonzalez in this fight.
Walt Harris, Mark Godbeer. This is another one. My pick is Walt Harris, but man, if you want to play an underdog, Mark Godbeer may not be a bad play. It is heavyweight and just takes one punch.
Yeah, man. It's not even like he's a slight underdog. He's hovering around like 260, 270. And it's one of those deals where you got a slightly underwhelming heavyweight fight, pick the dog and you might be successful. The thing with Walt Harris is he does flash at times. He does showcase a lot of potential at times with his movement on the feet. And so maybe he'll take advantage of that long term. Short term, I will pick him. But, you know, you want to lay down some pesos. You can make worse decisions than going with the underdog at heavyweight.
Flyweights, Moraga and Bilotov. You talked about Bilotov a little earlier. I think this is a very clear win by him.
Yeah. Again, I think it would have done the UFC some service to put him in a place like on FX or main card where there's a bit more of a spotlight on a fighter that you were building up. Bilotov, to me, is the clear favorite here, the clear winner, and he's the pick. But John Moraga, battle-tested, probably one of the weaker challengers DJ's fought in his title reign. And I do think Magomed wins this fight. But one in which, like I said, I think there was some real value in just putting Bilotov on TV because he's a guy at flyweight I would expect we continue to talk about time and again.
Brad Tavares, Tiles Ladies. I like Brad Tavares. I'm going to go by decision primarily just because, well, of his history in the UFC because he only has one stoppage victory in the UFC, Daniel. Do you know when that was?
His first fight?
That would be his second fight against Phil Baroni, January 1, 2011.
That is insane. Wow. I forgot Phil Baroni returned to the UFC for a very, very sad stint. Wow. Yeah, definitely not going with the finish here for Tavares. Man, I mean, obviously, Brad, like, you got to think he will win the stand-up. I think Talos is the better grappler. Man, I'll go with Latus. I think he's a solid gatekeeper at middleweight. And I do not think Tavares will pass the gate at this point, even though he's been around for like, it's like 7 years.
And the fight card is going to kick off Matt Schnell against Marco Beltran. I'm going to go Matt Schnell.
Yeah, me too. I think Matt Schnell has upside compared to Beltran, but has some glaring holes. Don't think Beltran will be able to take advantage of those deficiencies, and Schnell wins this flyweight belt.
And we always know, it seems, we get a retirement after a fight card's over. I got two suggestions of who it could be.
Go for it.
Talis Ladies and Bobby Green.
Ooh, okay. Well, why would you say Bobby Green?
Just because he's lost three in a row. I know he's dealt with a lot of injuries. I mean, but I would say this. If he got released, I think Scott Coker could do some good things with Bobby Green.
Yep, I do too. I think Bobby Green is a guy who I think could really be successful in a smaller pond, right? Yeah. Like interesting cat. But yeah, wouldn't be surprised. Talis Lages has been around a while.
Should we mention Derek Lewis?
You literally must always mention a guy who has retired prior, right? Like, if a guy is retired, you will always mention him. He's always open to more retirements. Yeah, the heavyweight title fight is one you circle. But yeah, Verdum Lewis, winner. Yeah, or loser. Loser of Lewis and Verdum is the heavy, heavy favorite to retire. The sneaky pick is Demetrius Johnson as he retires to play video games. That is always on the table. Can't blame him. He could probably make a living literally just streaming himself playing video games. But my pick will be the loser of Verdum and Lewis, either one.
Yeah, that's got to be a good one. But that is UFC 216. But on Friday night, it is Bellator 184. As I mentioned, I've mentioned this on social media, and I'll mention it here. I really like this fight card. I think it's a very interesting fight card. You know, when it comes to the preliminary card, you know, the fight that would ultimately, you know, draw you there is Steve Cazola versus Carrington Banks. But when you look at those four fights on the main card, you know, really digging these four fights, you've got Taimingo and Higo's going to kick off. So we'll see how does Higo bounce back after, you know, missing weight early this year and then losing to Dantas, which I thought he performed pretty well in that Dantas fight. The return of Pat Curran, take on John Teixeira, Daniel Strauss against Manuel Sanchez, and Eduardo Dantas against Darian Caldwell. First off, in the main event, I think the thing, you know, my pick is Darian Caldwell, but I do kind of wonder, and when I talk to Darian Caldwell, extremely confident, said he's going to win this fight within the first 3 minutes, said he's going to put him to sleep, and it's ultimately Dan's decision whether, you know, he's going to get choked out or get knocked out. But I do wonder if Caldwell cannot get this fight to the ground, how does this fight go?
I think Dantas will win the majority of the exchanges, with Caldwell putting himself in a position with single strikes to change the dynamic of the stand-up battle. So I think Dantas is the more likely fighter to win this one on the feet, but Caldwell possesses tremendous power. We've seen him use his power to put his opponent in a rough position and then lock on a submission. So I think Dantas is a heavy favorite to win this one on the feet, though. With that being said, I still don't think that will be too big of an issue, man. I really do like Caldwell's wrestling in this fight.
And Caldwell is the betting favorite, -110. I mean, a slight favorite at -110. I know there's not a lot of talk about this Bellator card, you know, primarily because, you know, with the UFC having a pay-per-view this weekend. But this is one of the best bantamweight fights out there, you know, in all of MMA. So if you're, you know, home on a Friday night or, you know, set your DVR, this should be a good fight between Darian Caldwell and Eduardo Dantas. Co-main event, big matchup at 145 pounds. I kind of view the two 145-pound fights on this fight card kind of like a mini tournament in a way to kind of maybe help decide who's going to be the next title challenger, who will get the winner of Pitbull and Daniel Vaitchel, which is going to take place in November, which unfortunately will be on a over 24-hour tape delay here in the United States, Daniel. Still don't understand that in 2017, as we had 2018, that we're still dealing with tape delay issues, you know, for MMA. But Daniel Strauss, first time back since losing the title, he has moved his training from American Top Team to the Combat Club. You can go to this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast to hear my interview as I talked to Daniel about that situation. He really didn't... he basically said, "Of you know, there's times in your career you just have to realize you need to move on." He said, "You know, this happened when I moved from Cincinnati to ATT and now ATT to the Combat Club. So maybe it'll be interesting to kind of see how his striking is with work with Henry Hooft for the past couple of months." He also talked to me about how basically Hurricane Irma really screwed up his training. You know, losing power and you know apparently there was no power at the gym either, and so he talked about some of the issues that he had to deal with there. And Emmanuel Sanchez, he's a guy that he's always gotten to a certain point, and he can't take that next step. Maybe tonight's that night he takes that next step. I don't see it happening, but maybe it is.
Yeah, I feel like it's really consistent themes, not only with Sanchez, but with Teixeira. And bear in mind, a way to measure this fight card and why it's good is, I mean, you're talking about a fight card that features a reigning champion and two former champions in Strauss and Curran. So it's like a champion versus contender series. You have it back-to-back in the first instance we're talking about. Emmanuel has looked good, great ability to make fights close no matter the talent level of his opponent. But I still do think Daniel Strauss, unless what he talked about in your interview has in fact been a negative without him being aware of it, because you don't really know until the fight happens how it's affected your process, so much change as well as outside the cage natural disasters that surely impact your life. But unless that has played a drastic role, I think Daniel Strauss has so many fantastic tools in his arsenal that it will be tough for Sanchez to beat him. So in this instance, I'm going with the former champion Daniel Strauss to try and put himself in a position to get a fourth fight with Pitbull.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a very marketable fight.
It is.
You know, there's something you mentioned about kind of Sanchez and Teixeira kind of putting them together, and I think another characteristic that they both have, durable.
Yep, they do, man. I don't anticipate either Strauss or Curran getting a finish here. And like, I like Pat Curran to beat Teixeira as well, but I do think John Teixeira, I would say Teixeira has a better chance of beating Curran than Sanchez does of Strauss. But again, like, that's not even a big gap because I think these fights are pretty close. And I would be shocked if even though I'm picking Strauss and Curran, I would anticipate one of these two upsets to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think with, you know, Curran coming back for the first time in 16 months to recover from injury, he talked to me about how he has changed up his training, now only spars one time a week. He thinks that he didn't necessarily relate to the tournaments, but, you know, kind of the frequency of fights that he had earlier in his career maybe kind of took some years off his career, but already kind of planning out his post-fighting career there. I do want to get this comment from James where he said, Bellator's next card is okay for hardcore fans, but I doubt the rating will be good. I like Coker, but he needs to step on the gas with heavyweights. Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a great card, but is it going to draw well in the ratings? Probably not. You know, but I think in terms of fight quality, the quality is very high here. So, you know, on Friday night, I'm going to be watching these fights. But ultimately to me, the major reason to tune into Bellator is the main event, but also you've got two former champions and a lot of question marks, I think in particular around Pat Curran, who I think, you know, just because he hasn't fought in 16 months, people forget the fact of he has won back-to-back fights. And you know, if he can go out there and get the win. And the other thing he told me that I thought was kind of interesting is I was talking about how durable Teixeira is. And he mentioned, he goes, one of the things you notice is you got to stay away from his combinations. He goes, you got to particularly stay away from that third punch. He said that's where he ultimately has a lot of success is when he's able to land that third punch and a three punch combination. So, you know, the Bellator card, it's a nice fight card. I'll be tuning in. I'll be looking forward to it. And I mentioned on the prelims, Cazola and Banks, that is a great little matchup between lightweight prospects.
Yep. I would even look at see if Gas and Reyno can continue to become the Uruguayan Conor McGregor.
Well, he's not on the fight card anymore, by the way.
Well, that's because he's holding out and he's obviously going to get a portion of Bellator.
Some people had put some reports out there that Weston Wilson was off the fight card. I reached out to his management and they're like, no, he's still fighting on the fight card. I think what happened was Bellator had made a mistake on their website. But Gastineau out of the fight card due to undisclosed regions. Ooh. Weston Wilson's going to take on LJ Hermreck, Weston Wilson, anyone who gets to know who he is, you can go over to MMAReport.com, watch a video interview I did with him. Talked about being a Mormon fighter, and he's actually, for the old school Bellator fans, he is coached by Rad Martinez. The old school Bellator fans will remember Rad. You know, hanged him up a couple of years ago, but he is a coach, and had a really good conversation with Wilson. So be sure to check out that. That'll be a part of the preliminary card. So you know, nice little Bellator card on Friday night. Nice little UFC card on Saturday night. Of course, we'll have a post-fight podcast coming up following both of these fight cards. Daniel, I'm off this weekend. I'm not sure exactly what to do with myself. It's not very often during football season I have a weekend off, so I really don't know what to do.
Man, what to do? Well, one thing you could do, Jason, is grab a cold one, grab some wings, and watch Texas A&M beat Alabama on Saturday. You can watch that before the UFC card. Although, whoa, why the hell are you laughing, you monster? What are you? Why are you laughing? Why is that an unrealistic?
Take your Kevin Sumlin sunglasses off.
Okay, it's been 5 years since A&M did the impossible and Johnny Football beat Bama. And I swear to God, Kellen Mond is going to do it again. So just be prepared, Jason.
Look, will I be watching a lot of college football on Saturday? Of course, I'll watch my Noles, and they'll probably give me more gray hairs.
Yeah,
there was a lot of yelling in my house last weekend as they were playing Wake Forest. A lot of yelling. I think I scared my wife a little bit.
Hey, man, but they pulled it out and got the win. I tell you what.
Let's just say when Jimbo punted the ball 4th and 2 on the Wake 38-yard line, said a lot of words you couldn't say on a podcast. Well, you could say on a podcast. We're not FCC regulated, but I choose not to do it since I still do stuff, you know, where I can't say those words. But yeah, it was it worked out for FSU. But yeah, there was a lot of colorful language in my home when he punted on 4th and 2.
Oh man, yeah, nothing. The emotional experience of being a fan of a college football team is literally unlike anything else other than, I don't know, marriage, but I don't know what marriage is like. But yeah, it's
so
crazy.
So you always talk about the chicken wings, and I know our listeners love to hear this. What is the Daniel recommendation for flavor this weekend?
Oh, man.
What's the go-to? All right, so when you're watching Texas A&M allegedly beat Alabama, as you say, apparently you've been drinking a little bit this morning. What is the go-to wing to watch Texas A&M play on Saturday?
Well, first and foremost, I think you got to have a 6-to-1 ratio of 6 wings for every beer you have. So I would say get a 12-pack, 18-pack, 6-to-1 ratio.
Jesus.
I'm talking like we're drinking, we're watching wings all Saturday. We're going to watch college football, and when it's nighttime, we're watching DJ and Borg, and we might have, like, be so hammered we'll imagine a Borg victory. But, man, tried and true. I'll just go with what I had this past Tuesday, because this is what I do. I go to college and then I go eat lunch at a local wing establishment like Wingstop, and I drink some beers, I do some wings, and I go back to class, and somehow I do worse in school. But I'm going Mongo Habanero, pretty standard. I tell you what, this next week I'll experiment with some new flavors, but by God, you cannot go to Wingstop, man. And I love me some Buffalo Wild Wings, but Wingstop, bone-in, Mongo Habanero, get yourself some French fries. Oh, those are delicious. You can play around with the drink machine, but for sure get at least 60 wings to go and get enough beers to cover the palates, because beers and wings, I mean, look, it's you'll wake up the next day hating yourself, taking less shirtless selfies, but the life of a wing eating day is just truly tremendous.
I'm glad you said bone in and you didn't say boneless.
Look, man.
You know what I call boneless chicken wings?
What?
Chicken nuggets.
Oh my God. Stop shaming the people who eat boneless. Let someone eat the wings how they enjoy it. Don't get me wrong, Jason. There is something wrong with you if you don't get bone in. It's okay if you get boneless and also get bone in. Like, boneless is like a little bit of a palate cleanser, you know. You can just get it with the fork, dip it in some ranch, and enjoy the chicken nugget, whatever you call it. Chicken nuggets are delicious, by the way. But
I'm not saying they're not delicious. I'm just saying, yeah. like who came with this boneless wing? When every time it's like, it's chicken nuggets, okay?
Look, man, you can charge a similar price for a lot less money, and when it comes to production, you'll do it 10 times in the week, but. Dude, no one's gonna go to a Wingstop and order a chicken nugget. Okay, that's so demeaning. That's so demeaning.
That's, right? That's a good point.
Chicken, I have a chicken nugget with your, yeah. I mean, McDonald's have ruined the chicken nugget. Chick-fil-A's trying to bring the chicken nugget back. I tell you what, the difference in quality of those two chicken nuggets is like night and day, all right? One, you can tell they just grabbed all the chicken parts on the floor and made it into a chicken nugget. And then Chick-fil-A, like, oh my God, that's some premium chicken.
I'm just saying, the thing I love about my Chick-fil-A is on the weekends, because that's particularly when I go there, they have people with like their tablet, and they just come, you know, you don't have to wait to go up to the thing. They take your order, boom, boom, you're in and out. I love it. And you got to get Chick-fil-A sauce.
Oh, yeah. I like getting Chick-fil-A and buffalo sauce and mixing them together. But I
see,
how
now
much
you make, now you make me hungry.
How much Chick-fil-A do you get? Because I feel like whenever I order a Chick-fil-A, I'm always hungry after. Like, it does.
I just get the meal. I'm usually fine with that.
Wow, you're weird. I go spicy Chick-fil-A sandwich, fries, tea, and then I order 10 or 12, actually, more chicken nuggets.
Jeez, how much is your bill when you go to Chick-fil-A?
Look, man, I work a lot of freelance just to pay off my food addiction. At the end of the week, after all the sport games I do camper for, I ended at about $0 in my bank account after all the wings and stuff. Like, I had crawfish. That was really expensive and a bad date idea, but really bad date idea. I didn't realize how gross. Like, I went to the crawfish place, and I had to go to the restroom to Google how to eat crawfish because it was pretty intimidating. It was one of those things where I haven't done it before, and I did do it, and it was interesting, but a bad date. I haven't gone on a second date since.
Yeah, probably not what you want to do for a first date there. But, of course, we'll recap everything that happens this weekend in UFC and Bellator on the post-fight podcast. Of course, you always hear this on RadioInfluence.com. And by the way, if you're a football fan, definitely give a listen to Landry Footballs this week. He looked into the rise and fall of LSU football and also talked about why Nebraska has not been able to regain the dominance that they once had. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast, which you hear before every UFC and Bellator event on RadioInfluence.com.
This is an Ian Beckles Flava in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
If you listen to Donald Trump, you know, Donald and the U.S. government is doing a top-notch A1 job. If you listen to Donald Trump, if you listen to a Puerto Rican person, they would like to slice off his testicles. So it's probably somewhere in the middle of there, whether it's definitely not a bang-bang perfect job, because there was people a week later talking about, we haven't seen FEMA yet, like nobody. Or FEMA showed up and didn't have any produce. So it could have definitely been better. Could it have been worse? Sure. And everybody, but in a time of need, and I don't know if Trump fans listen to the show anymore. They're probably all gone. But in a time of need, there's got to be a handbook on what a president should say to a country. There has to be a handbook on what to say and what not to say to a country. Donald Trump got the wrong handbook. He got the handbook of things that you can't say to a country when they're going through this kind of issue. This is what you can't say to a country. Well, you know, Katrina was a lot tougher than you guys. It was a lot harder than this. So you guys are lucky. So as their houses are underwater, you're telling them how lucky they are, and they haven't had any water in 2 weeks. So, I mean, that's representing us.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flava in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.